Start recording.
All right, welcome the two people here and many people online to ASTRO seminar this week. We have Jon Barnekar. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. Jon did his PhD with Axel 10-ish years ago and then moved to I think a visit to Finland, and then most of the post PhD research experience in Max Planck Institute for Solar System Research in Göttingen. He is an expert on solar physics, and today he's going to tell us about small scale dynamos. Go ahead.
Thank you for the invitation. Basically, I step in for Marit, who I think is supposed to give a talk here, but she asked me some weeks ago if I can do it. And because the talk was anyway supposed to be about the small scale dynamo and mainly about the paper we had last year in Nature Astronomy. And I will talk about this and give you some new results and something about this. So the work is done. So I'm from the Max Planck Institute for Solar System Research in Göttingen, Germany, and the work is done together with Mari Kopilek from the Aalto University and her postdocs or scientists Fred and Matthias, who probably you. Many people you know, and Johannes and Oscar, Johannes Pekele and Oscar Lappi, who are actually a computer scientist, or they're doing their PhD in computer science, and they're helping a lot for setting up a GPU solver, what I also will use for some or show some results with this. So let me start. So I will talk about the significance of the small scale dynamo and the sun and the stars. And let me first tell the people who don't work on the sun and other stars that so work on galaxies, that stars are very interesting. So as you see here on the left, you see a complementary image or a merging of several images of the solar corona, the outer part of the sun. And you see how nicely dynamic it is. And it's very interesting to study. The sun, our closest star, is of course a unique plasma laboratory to study things. And you have study can study very closely. Can also study the interaction of turbulent motions and magnetic fields. And the sun, compared to other stars and also galaxies, you can observe this in very great detail in a very nice high resolution and very nice temporal evolution. And if you compare, for example, the sun with other stars to put the sun in perspective, we can learn a lot about this interaction of turbulence of magnetic field and so MHD. And one point is, of course, how space weather. So that's, for example, when you have these prominence, they can reach up to have explosions, CMEs called, on the sun, and they can affect the Earth and affect the Earth, and that's called space weather. And of course, everything what we learn from the sun and other stars can be applied to accretion disks, galaxies, and of course, exoplanets. So that's why it's very unique or interesting to study the sun. So as a nice picture here, this is the observation done from the Swedish Solar Telescope. So Göran is in the audience, of course, and know it. So this is a sunspot and a very beautiful picture on the sun. And this is comes from that you have a strong magnetic field which suppresses the turbulent convection on the sun. So the heat transport by convection is suppressed because of the magnetic field, and that's why it's appears dark here in the middle. And to give you a context, so one of these granules here, so that's the convection at the surface, one cell is roughly the size of Germany, so like 1,000 kilometers. So it would be in length also maybe comparable to Sweden. Yes, and when you look at the sunspots, so this is, for example, in sunspot, I was lucky to observe with the time doing my PhD when I went actually could observe with the Swedish solar telescopes. So sunspot I observed there. If you have people have observed sunspot for many years now, well, over 200 years, and they have found a pattern, and that's called this diagram to show this pattern is called the butterfly diagram. What you see here at the x-axis is the time evolution, and the on the left-hand side is the latitude. And what is here color-coded is the appearance of the sunspots. And what you see that you have a nice cycle dependency of this appearance of sunspots, which is 11 years, roughly. And you see that in the beginning of the cycle, the sunspot appears at mid or high latitudes. And at the end of the cycle, they appear at low latitude. So, and this is, of course, a very interesting feature of solar activity. If you look at other stars, we know already since many years now, nearly 30 years, or even earlier, that also other stars, solar light type stars, have other cycles. So this is shown here in the calcium H and K line. So this is a chromospheric line, and it's like a signature of magnetic activity. And there you see that you also see a cyclic variation. So there are many other stars who also show cycles. And this actually represents the nature of the solar and stellar dynamos, that they are cyclic. And every dynamo model of the sun should, of course, try to reproduce a cycle. As I showed before, you see this nice butterfly diagram, this nice cycle, 11-year cycle. So the magnetic cycle is actually 22 years because you have a change in polarity. This is driven by two main ingredients. So one is the turbulent convection. So the convection is very turbulent. You have some effects with rotation, which is often parameterized or called together with like the alpha effect. You have effects like turbulent pumping, turbulent diffusion. And the other part is the so-called differentiation, which is actually also driven by the turbulent convection. And the differentiation means that here at the equator, so that's the cut through the sun, rotates faster at the equator and slower and at the poles. And this, because of this, you have a strong shear. And this shear, together with this turbulent convection, can drive cyclic magnetic fields, which appears like these sunspots. So this is called what we normally call this the large-scale dynamo, the global dynamo in the sun. So what's then the small-scale dynamo? So the small-scale dynamo, we have this very simple picture, for example, to explain it, which is a copy and paste from Axel's review, is you can imagine you have a rope, a flux rope, or a flux, yeah, a rope together, and then you stretch it by an incompressible flow, where you have the same volume. And then you will see that because the crux section goes half, you will actually generate something which has already twice the magnetic field. And if you then twist it together like an eight and fold it and merge it again, you will end up with the same structure, but with a double amount of magnetic field. Well, that's like a toy model to represent what you can have in a small-scale dynamo action. And the main feature is that in a small-scale dynamo, that the energy, the magnetic energy, is roughly the same scale or smaller scale during your driving scale. So that would be, for example, for the sun, your convection. So the driving scale of your convection. So that the magnetic field is smaller than this. And in contrast to the large-scale magnetic field or large-scale dynamo, you don't need any rotation and you don't need any large-scale shear. So normally what you only need is turbulence and high enough Reynolds number to really drive it. So why is the small-scale dynamo important in the sun? To summarize, it can provide strong fields on small scale. So I said equipartition, so that means fields which are dynamically important. So they are so strong that they have a similar strength, or the energy is similar than the kinetic energy or the thermal energy, and then it can influence the whole dynamics. And for example, you have interaction between the two dynamos, so large scale and small scale dynamo interaction can actually influence your flow, your convective flows in the sun, and it can through this also influence the angular momentum transport. So that means how the differentiation look like can be potentially also influenced by the small scale dynamo or the small scale fields. And if you study the energy flux, if you study for example, the heating of the solar corona, so the upper part of the corona, it can provide a lot of energy flux through the pointing flux through the corona, because you have these strong fields on small scales. So as an example, for example, there have been the study by Hotter et al., which study a large-scale magnetic field, which has also a large-scale dynamo, which has a small-scale dynamo together. And they did like three cases where they changed the resolution. So they changed actually, they went from lower Reynolds numbers to higher Reynolds numbers. So it means they from higher diffusion to lower diffusion. So in these terms, from being they went to being a bit more realistic in terms of diffusion. But they found that you have a magnetic field first, large scale magnetic field here. What's shown is the magnetic field as a function of latitude and time. You have a first strong magnetic field that seemed to vanish, and then later it reappears. And their interpretation is that an efficient small scale dynamo can suppress small scale flows, and that's why you obtain the large scale dynamo back. So it's a bit complicated story, but that is one example where the small scale dynamo actually affects, for example, the large scale dynamo. The other effect could be is, for example, on the angular momentum transport. So what is shown here as a function of Reynolds number, the magnetic Reynolds number, so lower diffusivities again, you show some measurement of the differentiation, and you have different sets of run. And what you see that it really goes from a certain value, it goes to zero. So it means that the influence, so when you have higher magnetic Reynolds number, you have a stronger small scale dynamo, and this can actually destroy your differentiation. And that's not good, because you want to have a differentiation maybe which looks like the sun and drives your large scale dynamo. And more recent was there also work by Hideyuki Hotta, who actually found that if he has a very high resolution, so here, and high magnetic Reynolds numbers, he finds that the differentiation actually change from being slow equator fast pole to being opposite. So that the differentiation significantly flips because of the influence of the small scale dynamo. So that means that the small scale dynamo is very important to study. And one important parameter is the magnetic Prandtl number. What is the magnetic Prandtl number? Is the ratio between the viscosity and the magnetic diffusivity, or you can also point it out is the ratio between the two Reynolds number. And it basically tells you through which channel the diffusion is happening. So if the either through mostly viscous dissipation or mostly ohmic dissipation. So to illustrate a bit what is happening, so if you have maybe a toy picture of a kinetic energy, so the spectral kinetic energy, that can be looked like this, that you have somehow here driving scale, then you have inertial range, maybe if it's nice behaving turbulence, you have some Kolmogorov scaling, and then you have a dissipation range at a certain scale. So, and if you then have lie on the top, maybe how a large-scale dynamo would look like, a large-scale dynamo would produce energies on larger scale than your kinetic energy. So that would be a feature of a large-scale dynamo, for example. Yes, and then a small-scale dynamo could look like this, that you have that your peak or the most of the small-scale dynamo energy is actually at lower scales or higher case, lower scale, lower scales than the driving scale. So now this is what I shown here, what would represent maybe a frontal number, magnetic frontal number one. And if I change now this magnetic frontal number, it would mean that the scales, especially at the end, so where the dissipation scale is, that will change as a toy picture. So if you go to higher magnetic frontal number, that would mean that you have more dissipation actually in the viscous range. So because this goes comes later, and if you go to smaller frontal numbers, then actually you have more diffusion in the magnetic range, so more ohmic diffusion. And there you can, if you play this picture and blow it up a bit, you can already imagine that a small scale dynamo, so which is driven here mostly by the inertial range or by the smaller scales, there it makes a difference if you are in low frontal numbers or high frontal numbers, because your background turbulence, so your kinetic energy spectrum, would look very different for the same scale than for the other frontal number. So when you go for the smaller scale here, it would be kind of in the inertial range, but if you go to higher frontal number, then this is in the dissipation range. But anyway, that's just a toy picture. So now if you want to talk about small scale dynamo in the sun, the problem is that inside the sun, the magnetic frontal number is very, very low. It's 10 to minus 6 or 10 to minus 4. So, and this is very different than when you go in the outer part of the sun, so in the corona, where the frontal number are very high. So very high frontal number. The same is in galaxies and ISM. So you had to, some weeks ago, you had to talk by Fred Gent, who talks about small scale dynamos in interstellar medium, and this is mostly high frontal numbers. And that's very different. So for low frontal numbers, there have been interesting study some years ago, which show here, so here's the Reynolds number, the magnetic Reynolds numbers. Here color-coded the growth rate. And what is basically shown here in these curves, that you see that the critical magnetic Reynolds number, so that is the threshold where you have to be above to excite a small-scale dynamo. And you see, the more you go to lower frontal numbers, that this is really increasing. And that's, of course, a fear that if you would then go maybe to these low frontal numbers as in the sun, that this critical magnetic Reynolds number is that high that even in the sun, there might be no small scale dynamo. And so that was, after the studies, that was always a bit of fear. So the question was really, or is really, can a small scale dynamo be, even operate in the sun and under realistic low quantum under values? The problem is, if you want to study this, it's very numerically challenging. So for example, if you want to have a Reynolds number of 200, which is maybe close to the critical value or above the critical value, and you want to go to low Prandtl numbers, for example, 0.01, then you already have to have a fluid Reynolds number of 20,000. That means you have to use that high resolution that you can resolve, that you can run your simulation with a fluid Reynolds of 20,000. And that's pretty challenging, and you need quite a high resolution to do that. The other idea is, from observation, you can try to see if you see some evidence of a small scale dynamo. And what you see here is four different studies. This is from a recent review, which actually show that you always find at least strong fields at small scale. So this is a distribution, and you see some fields. This is around even 1,000 kilogauss, something like here. You see a small distribution of very strong fields on the solar surface. So, and the question is where they come from. Are they actually from a small-scale dynamo, or are they actually from a large-scale dynamo? Because the large-scale dynamo can produce large-scale magnetic fields, but will always also produce fields on smaller scales. Or you can also describe it in this, that from a large-scale field, so like on the sun, turbulent motion always will tango field to very small scales. So that means we see very strong fields, but is this small-scale dynamo is not so clear. So one idea is if the field, the small-scale field, what you see, and if this depends on the cycle, the global cycle, so the sunspot cycle of the sun or not. And if it, the idea is if it does, then maybe the field is actually from the large-scale dynamo. There are some, you can discuss it a bit critically if you can actually make this logical connection, but let's assume that we can do it. And what does observation show? So the observation are a bit diverse, but most of the study actually see no cycle dependence on the very small field or intergranular field. So that's the question. Does this mean now that the solar small-scale dynamo exists? So we, and then let me also mention that there have been many studies, what is called, what are called realistic small-scale dynamo simulation, for example, by Matthias Rempel and co-authors. So using a code, for example, the Murram code or Stagger code or similar like this. So normally I do convection of the upper part of the solar surface, where this model the convection with radiative transfer. And they can actually quite well reproduce observed features with their small-scale dynamo operating in there. The problem is with this simulation is they use normally numerical diffusion schemes, which can be a bit tricky because these schemes are potentially also can generate dynamos in 2D, which shouldn't be allowed. And also they are not pure small-scale dynamos because they can have magnetic field coming through the lower part of the box. And then they normally operate roughly in the frontal number one, magnetic frontal number one regime. So not in the low frontal number regime. So that's why that they can reproduce nicely the small-scale dynamo doesn't mean that there's really a proof that in the sun that we have. So what we did in the study is that we use Cartesian local boxes. So we go, what I say, back to the roots. We do a very simplified model because the simplified model are cheaper and you can really drive them to very high Reynolds numbers. So we use a high resolution up to 4,000 cube run. I show later even as 8,000 cube run. We use isothermal MHC equation. We start with the weak Gaussian seed field and then tried several Reynolds numbers and went up to 33,000 or even later with 66,000 Reynolds number and the Prandtl number up to 0.0025, which is probably one of the lowest lowest magnetic Prandtl number runs ever achieved. And then what we are only interested if a small-scale dynamo can grow or not. So we just look at the so-called kinematic phase where we see exponential growth of the magnetic field and see if you have a nice growth or if it's decay. And then we can estimate if potentially the small-scale dynamo can achieve. The turbulence we create by force turbulence by actually by non-helical transfer plane waves with a wave number of kf equal 2. And with this also with kf equal 2, we define, for example, our Reynolds number. Good. So if you're interested in the equation, look like this. This is basically just solving typical momentum equation, either thermal, Lorentz force, viscous term, and disforcing term. Then you have the magnetic field in terms of the vector potential, and you have the continuum equation. So let us first look at the growth rates, what we find out up to a certain Reynolds number. So this is basically what have been achieved also before. And color coding is red, you have positive growth rate. If it's blue, you have negative growth rate. And here you also nicely see that, and this is, oh, a low Prandtl number, that's Prandtl number around one. You actually see that in this area that the, what you also have been seen before, that the actually critical magnetic Reynolds increases if you go to lower magnetic Prandtl numbers. So, and then it's the question, what is happening on this side? So that for this, you need very this high resolution. Let me maybe show you first how one of these high resolution simulation look like. This is now 4,000 cubed. On the right hand side is the kinetic energy, the right hand, left hand side kinetic energy, your right hand side the magnetic field in a log scale for low Prandtl number runs. And yeah, you see here these larger structures and here more nicer structures. If you try to illustrate it a bit in a fancy way of the magnetic field, you actually see very strongly that you have very localized strong fields. And you have then also localized very parts in the box, which doesn't really have a lot of magnetic field. You can also look at one, for example, doesn't go. One movie here, so on the right-hand side, left-hand side, again, the kinetic energy, right-hand side, magnetic field at the same time. And you see you have this nice high-resolution structures. And here you have the small-scale magnetic field, which operates on much smaller structures. So, and if you now fill up the rest here with high-resolution simulations, you will find that this curve here goes even down. So it's as before, it goes up. And then if you go to smaller magnetic Prandtl numbers, it actually goes down. So you even find for very high, very low Prandtl numbers and high Reynolds number that the critical magnetic Reynolds number is even lower than for immediate Prandtl numbers. Well, that's the new thing. And this hasn't been found before, that just really have a turning of the curve. And this was only possible with this high resolution simulation. So if you want to look at it a bit in detail, what you can do is for the set of runs with the same Prandtl numbers, we plot them. See here the growth rate as a function of magnetic Reynolds number. So, and then you have these dots here, and then you connect them with lines. And I use here a logarithmic fit based on the theoretical work of Nathan Kleoring and Igor Rogachevsky, who's also in the audience, I think. And so you already see that fits quite well. And from this formula, you can actually determine the critical magnetic Reynolds number for every set of PM, so set of numbers. Sorry, and then you can plot it as a function of Prandtl number. And then you see very clearly that for an immediate Prandtl number, and you have here a maximum of the critical magnetic Reynolds number, and then this actually goes down. And this run here is actually a run which is marginal. So this is the growth rate is really between close to zero. And this fits also quite well to this curve. So this means, so you see this critical peak here at a certain Prandtl number. So there is maximum, there is hardest to excite a small scale dynamo. But if you go to Prandtl numbers closer to one, it's get easier. And if you get even to smaller Prandtl number, it's easier. You can then even, if you're very brave, you can extrapolate the scaling here to the sun. And then you would find, oh, the critical magnetic Reynolds number is around 40. So that would mean that very good news for the people who like the small scale dynamo, because this means that From this theoretical work, it is well possible to excite a small-scale dynamo in the sun, and it's become even easier if you go to small magnetic front number. Yeah. Good. Then the question was or is, why is this possible, or why we see this curve that you see for certain Prandtl numbers very high, high critical magnetic rain or somewhere, and then to the both sides it basically become easier. And for this we look at the magnetic and kinetic spectra, and what we see here is the kinetic spectrum as a function of wavelength, and you see this very nice Kolmogorov scaling here. And when you compensate for the scaling, you will find something what is called a bottleneck effect. Sorry. Speak a bit. So what is the bottleneck effect? It's actually a well-known hydrodynamic effect, which have been also seen in experiments and numerical simulations. And we see is that is you have really a bump. And I explain it for me a bit like this is a bit like a traffic jam of the eddies going to smaller scales to diffuse, because you don't have so many eddies down here anymore, which can actually cascade or which can basically dissipate the energy. They're getting a bit stuck. And that basically what you see here. So for this work, we see this very unique feature, and there's a bottleneck, and we identify for everyone the peak of the bottleneck and the beginning of the bottleneck. And that's it, because already for previous theoretical work, for the small-scale dynamo, it will always critical depend on your background flow and what is sometimes called the roughness of the background flow, which means the shape of your spectrum. And what you see here is, of course, that this k to the minus 5/3 is significantly changed in this area. Changed in this area and gives you a different slope. And that might, of course, have a relation to the how the small scale dynamo look like. And to check this a bit properly, what we did was we then look at the magnetic spectrum. So this is for low time Reynolds number, low Prandtl number run, the magnetic spectrum. And we then calculate actually a characteristic magnetic energy scale, what we call here Km, which is sometimes it's called also the integral scale. So which should describe somehow the magnetic field spectrum in one number. And what we then do is that we are then plotting these as a function of Prandtl number. So what you see is the Prandtl number, so low Prandtl number here, Prandtl number one here. And here are the different wave numbers as a function of the Kolmogorov scale, so the Kolmogorov dissipation scale. And what you find here is that we overplot the peak of the bottleneck, and because the ratio of the bottleneck and dissipation scale never changed, that's why you see here a straight line. And then we overplot here in gray the Prandtl number range where it is actually hard to excite a dynamo. And what we find if we overplot this Km for all these runs, that if we find that actually exactly there, where this Km is in this, increasing slope of the bottleneck, so the start between the start of the bottleneck and the peak of the bottleneck, that the dynamos is hard to excite there. So this let us conclude or let us interpret the things that if the magnetic energy scale somehow feels the roughness of the bottleneck, which is different, it's very hard to excite. Of course, that need to be, if it's really the case like this, that need to be maybe checked with dedicated numerical experiments, but at least that's our interpretation from our analysis. Yeah, so this has been published last year. So how to go further with this is what we want, that we maybe even want to go even to lower Prandtl numbers and check if this continues. And for this, we need higher resolution. And the other important question is, we want to know what is actually the saturation value of the small scale diamond. That means, like, we know, okay, it's, you can excite it and it's growing, but the important question is also how strong it is. I mean, how strong for low Prandtl numbers is actually the small scale, the magnetic field generated by the small scale diamond? Because if the field at the end is only very, very weak, then it's also not important for the sun. So that's basically our next challenge, or what we are doing right now. But for doing actually this, we need much more computing power, because for the runs, to run the runs into saturation, you have to run them much longer. But luckily is that we have a GPO solver called Astaroth in our group, which can nicely solve the simulation, and they run much faster. So as an example, so if you do a 4,000 cube simulation with the Astaroth code, it run currently 10 times faster than the Pensa code when you're using 4,000 GPUs compared to 16,000 CPUs. So if you want to do a comparison, one GPU to one CPU, then you have another factor of four, so it would be a factor of 40 faster. So it means you can very nicely, efficiently run these runs and do it. And we also use this new European machine, Lumi, which is currently operating, or what is operating in Finland. So that's led us actually to run a few more simulations. I don't want to go too much into detail here. So we run a bit more simulation on this side. This is now a cutout. And we actually find that, first of all, we reproduce very well the old results. And we find, just by extending it to even low Prandtl numbers, yeah, the scaling changes a bit, but this is mostly because of the somehow of the error bus. But the basic features are very much the same and still continue doing it. And for these studies, actually, the 8,000 cube runs are still missing. We are want to run them in the near future. But what we have done also is that we started to run actually some of the runs into saturation. So what's here shown, here shown actually the growth rate, but this is like Prandtl number one. And there we actually nicely shown what is also confirming the theory that you have in the beginning, a growth rate which goes with the Reynolds, magnetic Reynolds, or to logarithmic. And then it actually goes close to a line which goes to the Reynolds number to 1.5, power of 1.5, which is expected from theory. So, but the interesting thing is what we found when you actually go to saturation is that, so the color coding is the different Prandtl numbers. So we have followed the Prandtl number one run a bit longer, that we see that at very high magnetic Reynolds numbers, the saturation value not only saturates, so become flat, but there's an indication that it actually goes down. And we have currently a 8,000 cube run running. So this might go a bit higher, where we want to check how this is. And if this is really going down, that would mean that would be very interesting. What, because that means that at very high magnetic Reynolds number, maybe the small scale diamond becomes even not important. But that needs to be checked. Yes, and this is very different here when you look at these numbers from what Fred showed you some weeks ago, where you have only 5 to 10% of the saturation value. So in terms of the, if you calculate in terms of the energy and magnetic energy into kinetic energy, or if you calculate it back to the magnetic field, you have only 5 to 10%, but we reach numbers which is 0.7 or 0.8 in maximum. But what we also see here, indication that if you go to lower Prandtl numbers, that actually when you go to saturation, that the difference in Prandtl number seem to vanish. So these in beginning a low magnetic Prandtl number, a low magnetic Reynolds number, they have different growth rate or different saturation values, but they are all seem to fall on top of each other here in this area. But that's need to be also studied later. So if the saturation level is decreasing, this of course also causes a big problem for all the small-scale dynamo models who run with this numerical diffusion, because they are somehow always show that you have increase of the saturation value, and also that that basically you can use this numerical diffusion as a mimic of high of high Reynolds number turbulence. And if this high Reynolds number turbulence behaves very differently in terms of saturation, then this argument cannot be used. So let me just at the end, show a few results of studies what I did, the large scale dynamo and small scale dynamo interaction in global models. So I modeled the whole sun, or basically convection zone of the sun, which is heated from the bottom and cooled from the top. And you have self-generated convection and also a differential rotation. And this together generates a magnetic field. So mostly a large scale dynamo, but if you in Reynolds number is increasingly high, then also you have a small scale dynamo. So you can study the interaction. And so this you go show here from moderate Reynolds number of 30 to quite high Reynolds number of 530 in this global setup. And what we actually found that in this setup, there's the Reynolds number is too low for a small scale dynamo. But in the other setup, here's a weak, small, very weak small scale dynamo. But in these setups, there's a large scale dynamo, which can be also quite strong. And we can study a bit the interaction. And what we also did in the study is that we are interested what this would be the effect of a pure small scale dynamo in the global setup. And for doing this, we actually suppress artificially the large scale dynamo by removing the mean field, so the large components, the M equals zero, or you can call it the K equals zero component from the field. And there you see also the difference here. So here's the toroidal magnetic field for difference resolution with large scale and small scale dynamos together. If you and in the bottom, there's just small scale dynamo. You see that these large bands, which is still here, they are just have vanished, and you have just small scale patterns. So if you would average this over longitude, there would be actually zero. So and this is now a video of a very high resolution simulation of the global setup. On the left side, you see a radial velocity. On the right hand side, you see the radial magnetic field. And you see these curved convection cells, which is somehow often called the banana cells or Busse columns. And then you see that really in between them, you have very small magnetic features and stuff. Yeah, the problem is often when you run these very big simulations, they are so expensive that you can't even run them very long. That's why also the movie is very short and then it's in a loop. So let me show you two results of it. So one is, for example, you can look at the differential rotation. So what is shown here for the top row is the runs which have a large scale magnetic field and potentially a small scale magnetic field, a small scale dynamo. Here you have the pure small scale dynamo simulation, and here you have only hydro, so there's no magnetic field. And what you also see here, what is basically very common, but what I showed you before in an introduction, that you also you see you go to higher magnetic Reynolds number or higher Reynolds numbers, that actually the differentiation becomes much weaker. So these are here the number sets, what's the same as here. So you see that already at this Reynolds number, the differentiation is actually very strongly quenched. And the interesting thing is that, for example, in set number two, the small scale dynamo is actually very weak, because we know that we can see the magnetic field, how strong it would be in this case. And there the magnetic field is really weak. So you know that in this run, the magnetic field is mostly through the large scale dynamo. So, and we see that this is already enough that the large scale dynamo actually suppresses the differentiation. So you don't need actually a very strong small scale dynamo to do it. And this is a bit in contradiction to the recent results of Fadi Okuhota, who actually had simulation where he have only a small scale dynamo and says that this is important for suppressing the differentiation. And so if you do a more realistic study, you should actually always include the large scale magnetic field. And this plays an important role. So then also, about the magnetic field evolution. So what is shown here is the toroidal magnetic field, so the phi component of the magnetic field, which is averaged in phi. So it's called it also the mean magnetic field for different runs. And this is near the surface. This is a bit at the bottom of the convection zone. And this is like a cut as a constant radius. Sorry, as a function of radius, so as a constant latitude. So and what you see here is that in the road resolution runs, we are actually doing not so bad because we get a nice cycle magnetic field. And there seem to be also some feature which looks like the sun. But this is, as we know, somehow through some difference or in certain features in the differentiation, which are unfortunately not there in the sun. So the cyclic behavior, the equatorial migration, what we see here is similar as in the sun, is probably for a different reason. And then if you go to higher Reynolds numbers, you see actually that this basic cycle is vanishing, and that's because of the feature in the differentiation, who causes the S is vanishing. But you see some basic cycle, which is here at the bottom, which is still maintained, and which is actually at the bottom of the convection zone, as you see here. Then additionally, that is, I don't know if you can see it, there's a very high frequency mode, which is there, and this actually keeps there. And this is here a different time interval. And this mode is also still there. So this is actually still maintained and haven't been changed by the Reynolds. So that could be actually alpha squared dynamo mode, if you're familiar with these terms, because there actually the differentiation is very weak. And that may be one way. So it's all very complicated, because in these very complex, large scale, high resolution simulations, lots of things interacting with each other. And this is very hard to disentangle what is going on, really. But one feature seemed to be actually that the large scale evolution, beside this basic cycle, seems to be not so much affected actually by the change this is like a factor of nearly one order of magnitude in one order of magnitude in Reynolds number. Good. Coming to the conclusion. So about the small-scale dynamo models, so the local models, I showed you some high-resolution simulations up to down, to, and you get a small-scale dynamo even up to 10 to minus 3. And we see that actually the critical magnetic Reynolds number decreases when you go to very high, very low magnetic quantum numbers. And we seem to can explain it with the bottleneck effect, that you have this non-monotonic behavior. And it means that the small scale dynamo is indeed possible in the sun from theoretical simulations. And with the GPUs, we can actually confirm these results, but we see that there's an indication that the saturation level actually decreases for high magnetic Reynolds number. which could be very interesting findings. And I showed you at the end a bit about the interaction in the large scale with the small scale dynamo. And there we actually see that the differentiation is highly quenched by the large scale dynamo and the small scale dynamo. And yeah, to maybe summarize in general, you can see that the small scale dynamo seem to be more and more important. And the more studies we do, we find it's becoming important. So it means that if you do any studies of the sun, of the dynamics of the sun, the small scale dynamo need to be, of course, included if you want to describe it properly. But this, at the end, makes it also much more complicated. At the end, let me encourage all the people who work on very theoretical stuff and always have problems to really basically tell it to the public. So we got actually very lucky that even the New York Times, actually published some of our work in a very small feature as shown here. Yeah. With this, I want to thank everybody.
Thank you for the really nice presentation. Do we have any questions?
Jörn, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So in your talk, you mentioned turbulence many times. I'm not sure what I heard convection mentioned that many times, but you talked about the simulations made with a neuron code.
Yes.
Which shows evidence of a small-scale dynamo.
Yeah.
And there, as far as I understand, the essential mechanism for creating this dynamo is a convective flow patterns,
mm-hmm.
especially near the surface. And when you look at the strong field that is generated by these simulations and other simulations, it is always found in the intergranular lanes between where you have the strongly converging and the downflow. So, and my understanding is that this stretching of magnetic field that you need in order to have this dynamo working must come from the convective flow patterns that show an asymmetry between the upflows and the downflows.
Yeah, I mean,
you sort of remove the possibility of this effect.
Yeah, I mean,
strange.
Yeah, it's like this that we in this high resolution study. We didn't do convection because it's too expensive to do this such a study with convection. So that's a point we want to do in the future. And we are having already some setup doing this ready. So the main end, yeah. So you're right that when you have convection, the story is a bit different. So you have additionally through the normal small scale dynamo effect, what I talked about, you have this... that you can have local field concentrations, of course, because of this so-called convective collapse, what you talked. Yeah. So that's true. And then you can, of course, have locally also very strong magnetic field. And that's, of course, a feature which is not simulated in our case. And for this, you need to do convection. The simulation of Matthias Rempel, so if you do this, of course, you do the convection, which is more realistic. But on the other hand, you do other things which are not more realistic. And this is, for example, that your effective Prandtl number is 1 and not 10 to minus 4 or 10 to minus 3. So, and the other thing is that you use this artificial diffusion, and that can, of course, potentially lead to some artifacts and can actually lead to that your magnetic field is a stronger enhanced than it should be. But that need to be checked in detail. So that's just I wanted to put this in perspective. Yeah, but you're right that the convection might change the picture a bit. Yeah.
It seems from my understanding of the simulations is that the earlier simulation that if you don't have sufficiently high resolution in your simulation, then you don't get this kind of effect.
Yeah, that's true.
Because
yeah.
The diffusion sort of washes out the magnetic field before it is amplified by the convection.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the same.
You are saying almost the opposite, that if you have high resolution, your numerical diffusion may amplify in a false way.
What I want to say is that depending on your diffusion scheme, so how your diffusion entered the system, how you describe your diffusion by your equation. And this is, of course, done in the Murram simulation through this slope limit diffusion scheme. And that's a scheme which is a highly nonlinear scheme. And the scheme can potentially get you stronger magnetic fields than what you would otherwise expect from a scheme where you have, for example, where you have a constant diffusion. So, and depending on how you tweak this scheme, you can actually get two strong fields. So I don't say that it's happening, but there's a fear. You have to be a bit cautious about this. But otherwise, we are in, there's not big contradiction. I mean, they said, okay, or if you have a high enough resolution, you will get a small scale dynamo. That's the same as we saying, okay, you need a certain threshold of the magnetic Reynolds number. So that's basically just saying the same. So that's no contradiction, really, I would say.
And then I have an unrelated question.
Yeah.
These simulations made by the Murram, could they need this heat field to be amplified by the convective flow pattern? So that's one thing. But there have also been made other simulations which claim that you can have this so-called Biermann battery effect. You create very, very small magnet fields from nothing, so to say. Yeah. And these can then be amplified rather quickly by dynamo effects. And well, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that you might, I mean, when you think about the solar surface, there's always magnetic field somewhere. So you don't need even the Biermann battery to create a field out of nothing, because there's always some magnetic field. And of course, the small scale dynamo will just use any seed magnetic field to generate a field. So that's a bit, I think it's more an academic question if the Biermann battery operates in the sun or not, because you would not see the difference at the end.
All right, and then we have three questions on Zoom, I see. Let's go Axel, Igor, and Alexei.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, very interesting material and stuff and talk. At large magnetic Reynolds numbers, there were two unexpected phenomena. On the one hand, you saw a pretty abrupt decrease of BRMS. So if I understand correctly, until you reached a magnetic Reynolds number of 10 to the 4, the BRMS was still relatively constant, right? And then it only started to drop.
So here.
That looks, yes, exactly, yes. So it was even slightly increasing. Actually, what I really would like to see is as a function of Prandtl number, of course. Do you have such a plot? Oh, is it?
I mean, the Prandtl numbers are included.
Yes.
But the problem is, you can't do this with low Prandtl numbers. Then you do have to go to even much, much higher resolution.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so maybe
because
then it
this
was
is
not
like
a fair comparison. One should,
that's
but
the
course,
problem.
I
mean,
yeah.
This is
Of course, you do, of course, as small as you can. That's the question is what happens as with BRMS as you go down to 0. Point, I mean, as a function of Prandtl number, you have reached values on the order of 10 to the minus 5 times 10 to the minus
3 or something.
3, right.
Yeah.
And so if you then keep The magnetic resonance number the same for also the larger magnetic Prandtl numbers. Then I would like to know, how does BRMS evolve? Does it smoothly decrease, or does it stay constant, or what does it do?
I mean, here right. We see that, for example, this point here, this is the lower Prandtl numbers, and there seem to be no difference in Prandtl numbers.
Yes, so it's constant, right? That's what I, right.
So you still have this increase. So as a function of Prandtl number, there seem to be only at low Prandtl, low magnetic Reynolds number, a difference. But at some point, there seem to become, so no Prandtl number dependence anymore, yes. That's the indication.
So the dots where you see the drop then are then again for magnetic Prandtl numbers that are not.
That's all one, yeah.
Yes, I see. Yeah, right.
Yeah, otherwise,
okay, so
we
the
can't,
conclusion,
yeah,
would,
that's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Conclusion so far would be that it's actually constant, right? That's what I actually was also thinking.
Yeah,
if,
so we see
in
that
your
the Prandtl,
initial
yeah.
sketch, remember yeah. in your initial sketch, you showed that, of course, at high wave numbers, you have a decrease of the magnetic energy spectrum. That's, of course, expected. But in your sketch, you were actually also introducing some kind of shift. And so
yeah,
the sketch
yeah,
was, in
just,
that sense, not accurate.
Yeah, yeah,
qualitatively not accurate.
Yeah, this
and
sketch is a bit.
Is
yeah.
A related question is about the critical magnetic Reynolds number. You were actually saying it might even go as small as 40. Isn't
no,
that?
I mean, that's
that
just
is probably
if you,
not true, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, this is. No, what was it? That's,
yeah, because you extrapolated with a curve,
yeah, yeah.
right? It could just be constant. And then
yeah.
the constant would lie still around 100, if not even 120. And
that
I think 120 is what I found all the time in my 2011 paper. I think I found that it was 110, I think, in the nonlinear regime, or in the whatever, not nonlinear, but
yeah, yeah.
I thought it was 110 or something.
Anyway, that's true. Yeah. I mean, that is just, yeah, this 40 is just using this curve and putting
in
the solar.
This is probably not right.
Yeah, yeah. But you would expect, yeah, maybe it could be that it's somehow level off and becomes more like
yes.
a plateau.
Yeah.
But that's very, of course, there we are trying to maybe study right now. I mean, to see how much
Okay.
further it goes.
Right.
But even if it's at 100 or here, that's already very, very easy to excite, of course.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Great, thanks.
I think Igor is next.
Okay. Hi, Jorn.
Hi.
thanks a lot for a very interesting talk. About the fact that you found that if you decrease magnetic Prandtl number, so critical magnetic Reynolds number required for small scale dynamo decreases.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For very small magnetic Prandtl number, you said that you can reach the battle regions with the bottleneck where the spectrum of turbine kinetic energy deviates from the Kolmogorov spectrum.
You mean this here? but that's not depend. I mean, the bottleneck doesn't depend on the Prandtl number, of course.
Yeah, I understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah.
But for small magnetic Prandtl number, the main region for generation of the small scale dynamo, main scales, are outside the bottleneck effect.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
So that's the idea
range,
that you are. Yeah, that you are
in the inertial range. Therefore, since the inertial range is the same as far as it goes, one would not expect this level to decrease further. This critical arm to decrease that further, right?
Yeah, that could be. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. This I understand. And the second question: the Mach number in your simulations was small.
Low.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very small. Yeah.
It's very small, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And you cannot predict how this critical magnetic Reynolds number depends on Mach number.
No, I think there haven't been really studies for very low Prandtl numbers, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But did they, Axel? Haven't been there studies? for high
I mean,
Mach number?
I think Federer, maybe the latest was Federer did some such studies in the
But that's
recent
always
times.
high front runner.
No,
We
they
study
also
low.
did low.
Okay.
Their best, but I think what I remember is at least our study, and we found that there was a pretty sharp increase when you could when you transit a Mach number of unity.
Uh-huh. So you mean that when Mach number is increases, not very small, then critical magnetic Prandtl number should be critical magnetic Reynolds number should increase. Is
So
okay.
one thing we did already back then was we looked at the Reynolds number dependence or the critical Reynolds number that is just based on the vortical part, as opposed to the vortical and solenoid and irrotational part, because the irrotational part should not contribute to the dynamo, but of course it increases as you increase the Mach number. But I think quantitatively this idea was not working out too well. But this was at least an idea. I think we
But this
spelled it
was
out in our paper.
which Prandtl number was this?
One, two, and five, I think we studied.
Ah, so you not even went below one.
No, not below, yes. I mean, but we
At
went to
least.
Mach numbers of five, I think, even, and still had dynamos, right? That's not bad. Even back then, that
I mean,
was
for the sun, of
2005.
course, when you, I mean, near the surface, you have maybe you go close to the Mach number of one in a peak at least. But when you go deeper down, of course, they're always well below, well in the low Prandtl number regime, I would think.
Okay, thank you. At least
Sure.
theoretical predictions for increase of Mach number results in a strong increase of the critical magnetic Reynolds number. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
And then we have Alexei.
Hello. Thank you
Hello.
for hello. Thank you for a very interesting presentation. I am theoretics physics, and my question concerns the explanation, possible explanation of your numerical results via existing models. About a decade ago, Malyshkin and Boldarev found that helicity strongly affect the stability curve in the case of small Prandtls. They argued that maximum in the stability curve in the work of Shikachikhin and Iskakov, and you repeat this result and have a maximum for some parameters of dynamo. And so they explained this maximum via this effect via helicity. And so what could you say this idea and about mirror symmetry in your simulation and the value of helicity in your
I mean,
simulation?
the helicity, I mean, it depends how you define it, is, I mean, there's no rotation, so you would not expect that there's a mean helicity. Of course, you can have locally helicity, and I haven't really plotted it or something, how much it locally can be, but I guess it's not really strong. So I
Yes.
don't th think that's really important, but that maybe can be checked.
Yes, because you know that the effect may be quite strong on the one hand, and on the other hand, of course, numerical results, so numerical simulation is very high quality, but we always can obtain some constraints because of periodic boundary conditions, because of finiteness of Reynolds number, and so on.
I mean, we haven't really looked at the helicity. I mean, I can do it, but I don't think that it plays a major role here.
So your answer is that helicity cannot influence your simulation and cannot be the answer on the maximum, and so only bottleneck effect is a possible reason for this maximum. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, in our case, yes. I mean, don't say that. I think helicity, if you would have helicity, that would even, I think, increase, make the small scale dynamo even stronger. But that's a different thing. So we don't have rotation. We don't have large scale flows. So at least we would not have a mean helicity effect here. If local helicities can, I don't know, but I don't
so
would not think so.
They need helicity for brokenness of mirror symmetry, and so this can be some test of presence in of Levi-Civita tensor in the correlation functions.
Okay. But so you mean the kinetic helicity, or you mean the magnetic helicity, or?
I mean velocity helicity. This is a
kinetic one. Yeah.
Kinematic dynamo effect. So. Okay. Thank you a lot.
Okay. Sure.
Yes, I would agree. First of all, with what Jörn said. I mean, you said there's this maximum, and you mean, of course, the maximum in the critical magnetic resonance. So that means it would become harder. And in that sense, of course, magnetic helicity could not explain it, because magnetic helicity always makes the dynamo easier. That's
yes,
at least the study so far.
Okay, I agree with this, but it may differently occur in different Reynolds numbers, and so. The argument of Malyshkin and Boldarev that helicity play more important role for higher Reynolds numbers, and so the stability curve decrease for higher Reynolds numbers more intensive sorry for my English than for smaller ones.
Yeah, but then I would, if it's really depend on helicity, I would expect that it's just monotonically going, having a monotonic dependency on Reynolds number, and not that you have a bump in the middle and goes down again. I mean, that I wouldn't expect, I think.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay,
I don't know.
And it could be that so kinetic helicity, so the mean helicity is, as Jörn says, zero, and there's no reason that this becomes different from zero at any time automatically, because then you would ask, well, does it if it becomes different from zero systematically, does it become positive or negative? And there wouldn't be such an answer, right? You could not say it's, of course, always negative, because maybe I never checked anything. But what is possible is, of course, that kinetic helicity fluctuations play a role, but so do magnetic helicity fluctuations play a role. And magnetic helicity may actually play a much, much more important role, because that really is a strongly conserved quantity locally, and therefore also the global quantity, which is called the Hosking integral, is a conserved quantity. This has not been checked ever, whether this plays a role, but it's an idea, of course. But what it would mean for the dynamo, we don't know.
Excuse me, but magnetic helicity can play a role only in the nonlinear study of dynamo. And,
yes,
but
yeah, absolutely.
Here
right.
we have
yes.
stability curve, and so
yes,
kinematic
you're right.
regime.
Yeah. Yes, I was thinking about something nonlinear. Yeah, right.
Yep.
Thank you again.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Great. We have one more person, Alfio. Would you like to ask a question?
Hi, John.
Hi.
Thanks for this very nice talk. Really was very clear. And I only have a question concerning your comment. You said that it's possible to have a small scale dynamo in the sun. I would like to ask you to which extent your results are really important for understanding the dynamo, the solar dynamo, in general for the solar dynamo.
Yeah, of course, it's the first step. So the first step is to see if at low Prandtl numbers, if you can actually excite a small-scale dynamo. And that we have now shown that this is really possible, and it's even that the tendency is even that it becomes even easier the lower Prandtl number you use. But that's, of course, good. It's very good news because it means, yeah, you could maybe on the solar conditions excite a small-scale dynamo. There's, of course, the obstacle that what Jörn Schammer said, that we didn't do convection yet. And then maybe with convection, I would not guess that the picture will change dramatically, but maybe shift a bit. So that's one thing. And the second thing is, of course, that stepping step is to see if at these low Prandtl numbers, if you can actually have a small-scale dynamo, when you excite it, that become dynamically important. Because maybe it's, if the small-scale dynamo is there and it's not dynamically important, then we don't have to care about it. So that's also important. That's we are doing right now, but currently it seems like that the saturation value seems to be independent of Prandtl number. So that means that even for small Prandtl numbers, a dynamical important small-scale dynamos seem to be possible, I would say. And that means that if you do any studies, global dynamo studies, you probably should include some of the effect. And the problem is to really study it in more detail, or how the small-scale dynamo affects your global magnetic field and your global dynamics. We have to go always to very high resolution, because this only allows you to actually study this interaction. That's the thing.
Will you say that, can we say that this small-scale dynamo is somehow described in mean field theory by the alpha square contribution? In a sense, can we, if we write just a mean field, how will the alpha, the small scale dynamo impact, in which coefficient?
If you would write it down, you would have an E0, for example. A part of the electromagnetic field would not depend on the mean field. So that would be one contribution. Then the other contribution is just through some kind of quenching. And that maybe you could say that, okay, we have a certain quenching function in your alpha terms, in your omega terms, in your lambda effect terms, and all the different parameters. That's maybe the the easy part
I mean, I'm saying a very, very, really childish. If we you don't have differential rotation, okay?
Yeah, in this simple study. Yes.
So I will compare your result with something which has no differential rotation but has an alpha term very roughly.
Yeah.
So from this sense, I think it will make it's not completely idiotic to read that which has a sort of a alpha square type of dynamo, because we don't need to have something which is a pseudo tensor or pseudo scalar.
But alpha square dynamo still needs rotation, and that we don't have, for example. You still need helicity, and that we don't need for a small scale dynamo.
Okay.
I mean, there's, of course, this difference. So you would have an additional term.
Helicity doesn't, at least you might have a helical flow, even the flow is not, if you don't have a global rotation, no?
Yeah.
Helicity is only confined in the turbulence.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's a bit, the problem is that there are not many studies about the interaction of the small-scale dynamo with the large-scale dynamo, or how it affects actually the global dynamics. Just recently, a few studies coming out. So there's some studies by Heidi Yokihata, there's some power group, what I showed here at the end, submit soon. So that's the problem. We don't know. And there are, all these results are partly also contradictive. So it's not really so clear. So it really needs some time to really study this in detail. But the problem is you need always this very high resolution to do it. And then normally the problem is then the simulation become even more complex and mm-hmm. it's very hard to understand what's going on. That
okay,
makes it
thank you.
Thank you,
Jan. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, the best description of such a small-scale dynamo is, of course, in terms of the Kazantsev model, because the Kazantsev model describes second moments, second order moments, right? BIBJ. And that's the quantity that is really excited. It's not that's not the first moment, it's the second moment only for the small-scale dynamo. And so mean field theory is not itself the right thing, but it's a mean field dynamo for the correlation functions, and that's the Kazantsev model. There's so, also maybe some relation to the Steve Tobias idea, if you know what I'm talking about. He called
I was thinking to the Kreikmann model. So you mean the Kazantsev?
Yes, Kazantsev and Kreikmann are the same thing, I think, yes. And I think the Steve Tobias thing is also related to that. It's an extension of that, if I understand this correctly. But he also solves the quadratic moment for the equations for the quadratic moments, then they can also spatially depend on at least one coordinate direction, or maybe even several. But that makes it very expensive, because the correlation function means already you have an extra dimension.
Sure.
So that's and then, but what Jan said was also correct in the sense that there is quenching or modification of the transport coefficient. So one thing that Igor and Jennifer and I found out was that the turbulent diffusivity, for example, is lowered in the presence of a helicity. That's maybe a different aspect. That's a different aspect. The small-scale dynamo, however, enters, as Jan was saying, in the transport coefficient. So, for example, we know that the gamma effect is modified, the delta effect is modified, increased, I believe. But that I need to check. And then the eta effect supposedly is not modified, but that has never been checked carefully, I think.
If I not remember wrong, the Kazantsev model and the Kreikmann, they have prediction for the scaling exponents, which are different from the Kolmogorov scaling.
Oh, I see. Do you say the two disagree with each other? That I didn't know.
Really? I don't. I think they have various predictions. I'm not that sure. So, is it possible to make really a comparison to test the Kazantsev model with this small scale?
Yeah, I know that the Kazantsev model is an idealization, bit in the sense that it works with a flow which has only power at the very smallest wave number, and that's an idealization that doesn't make much sense in astrophysics. So, for example, in a 23 paper in Months and Notices, we found last year that the Kazantsev spectrum, which is a k to the plus 3/2 spectrum in the kinematic regime, right, exists only in the location where you have the inertial range of the turbulence.
Yeah,
and larger wave numbers, not below that. Whereas below
that's
that, you
only
have
where
you
that's,
spectrum.
Yes, that's true. You cannot apply the Kazantsev model beyond the inertial model, I think.
Yeah, you cannot strictly apply it, but of course, you can also not say that it doesn't play a role, because there is some phenomena happening that are very similar to the standard Kazantsev model. So it's not an entirely not new phenomenon, of course. So there's a standard dynamo, it's a standard spectrum, and with a standard value of the cutoff, by the way, the magnetic cutoff is related by the Kazantsev prescription to the growth rate, for example. So that's an interesting expression which we checked, and it all makes sense, even for real turbulence and not the idealization that is normally used. So Kazantsev is pretty good, actually.
Okay.
Even if it's not strictly applicable.
But Kazantsev would predict a monotonic behavior, not?
You mean with the wave number?
No, with the Reynolds number. Huh? With Prandtl number. No, but the Prandtl number doesn't really enter. Huh?
Not in the standard model, except Igor has such a thing with this Prandtl, I believe. Right, Igor? So you have a model where it does enter. But with the Reynolds number, yes, it should probably increase with Reynolds number.
Yeah.
The growth rate.
But
does, yes.
But the Kanzenchev model has this roughness included or not?
In the Igor model only.
In the Igor model.
Which is 2007, right? Igor? Is she offline? Yeah.
Nice. Mm.
Yes, you quote this probably.
Yeah.
Maybe I turn off the recording at this point.
Mm.
But thanks again.